quick content warning. This episode deals heavily with addiction, and we do have some references to self-harm stemming out of that addiction. So that's going to be difficult for you to listen to. Go ahead and skip this one. We'll see you next week. As Babylon 5 has totally normal chill episodes most of the time that don't deal with anything heavy. Hello and welcome to Who Are You? This is the Babylon 5 Watchcast, hosted by two former strangers, now friends, who have gotten to know each other while rewatching a favorite show from their childhood, Babylon 5. I'm Jafar.
And I'm Laura.
We've got a rare midday record for us.
I know. It feels so relaxed.
It's chill. I like the vibe. Normally it's early in the morning so that we can go about our days, or we record later in the evening so that you have time to make sure your children are in bed. So this is I don't know that we've ever recorded an episode at like 5 p.m. before.
Yeah, it's very rare. So, if we've done it. Yeah,
not complaining though, just I'm feeling the energy is a little bit, my energy is, I'm not subdued, I'm not super awake, I'm kind of in the middle. It's nice. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let us know, listener, your favorite time for us to record podcasts that we can ignore it and just do what works for our schedules like we have for the last several years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Until this is like a money-making endeavor, I am doing what works for me.
100%. Well, speaking of our schedule, we have one recasting left. As we're approaching the end of the series, we're going to have a lot of the last of these cold opens for Babylon 5 here. And so many of them are centric on the show that we're just going to lose them. And I mean, I'm sure like what we're doing today is recast, and we can bring recasting back on another show. And we'll probably do one for Crusade once we get used to those characters a little bit more. But this is our last recasting of Babylon 5.
Yeah, I feel a little guilty about having waited so long to recast this character.
Yeah, same. Unlike our next set of alignments, where I've called it the leftovers, I don't feel that way about this character at all. Mm. He's one of my favorite characters on the show. And we're recasting Veer today.
Yeah, and Veer gets a little bit of a bump in this episode, I think. You know, he's clearly being positioned to be a prominent person in the final episodes of season 5.
Mm-hmm. It's good to see. I mean, we know he's going to be emperor one day, so time to start buying into that.
Yep.
You want to go ahead and start us off?
Sure. I have to start us off by repositioning my Lanier actor, actually.
Yeah.
So I had chosen Michael Cera for Lanier, and I don't think that I want Michael Cera to be Lanier anymore. I think he's more of a Veer. Like, I need somebody who has that young face, and I think you also need that for Lanier, yes. But Michael Cera's a little bit more of a bumbler, I think, than the new pick I have for Lanier. I think that Lanier should have some sort of a self-seriousness to himself, especially after we've been in this whole incel arc. So I think I would move Michael Cera off of Lanier. All right. And I'm showing my recency Dune bias here by putting Timothy Chalamet as Lanier. So we just got to go update the old spreadsheet.
Yeah. Now, this does leave a gap here. So Timothy Chalamet for Lanier. And then Veer is Michael Cera. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I need somebody who's a little bit got some more comedy in him for Veer, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think even in this episode, he gives us some comedic moments. And we certainly know Michael Cera can do comedy, right? So I think Timothy Chalamet can pull off a little more self-serious, self-righteous, religious person. I'm excited for that recasting. What about you for Veer?
I definitely want a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's a very funny role. I think it's a role where a lot of the comedy is not in the forefront. I want someone who can be very funny in the background without having to be the star, but also has the chops for when you throw something at them, they can do a good job with it. And I need someone who can give us enough character growth over time, but still be lovable and kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I'm double checking to make sure I haven't. No, I have not used this person. Fantastic. I'm going to go with Jason Sudeikis.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Most recently, Ted Lasso.
Yes.
Which is a very, very funny show, if you have not watched it, listener. But also just all kinds of really good and funny stuff over the years. Is definitely capable of making himself the butt of the joke without it being in a way that makes anyone uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Which I think is an important quality for Veer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's definitely been the butt of a few jokes. But we love him because we can all identify with things he's felt and places he's been.
Mm-hmm. And that's the whole recast. We've done it all now.
Do we need to recap it?
If we do, we need to definitely put in a pause here because we're missing a handful of names from our list.
True. We could just recap our favorites, maybe.
I'm real happy with Christopher Jackson as Sinclair still. I think that's really fun casting.
Mm-hmm. I really liked your call for Kosh to bring back Bruce Boxleitner. I think that's delicious. I think the fans would love it.
I think Vika Ortiz... it would make an excellent Delenn, one of your castings.
Yeah, I was really proud of that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who could forget Rowan Atkinson as Byron? I mean, that's just going to be great, great fun for somebody.
Tig Notaro is a Garibaldi I might trust, unlike Jerry Doyle. So, here for that.
Yeah, you know, and I think I really want to see Tig Notaro dig into this arc, especially when we get to, like, this episode. I'm curious. Yeah.
Yeah. Throw us your fan casts at our Discord and we'll judge them as harshly as you've judged ours if you've made any comments in the past. Mostly that's just at Ben.
Yeah. Our Discord has been a very friendly place. Disagreements are handled very cordially.
Yeah. Which is. Of the things that I appreciate, the fact that we can manage a community Discord and we have not had a single moderator. We haven't had to worry about anything along those lines. It's been really nice.
Yeah, it is.
So, what's not really nice, though, is to see all your dreams and have them torn asunder.
Very good.
Thank you. We got season 5, episode 16, All My Dreams Torn Asunder. We open on Sheridan waking up without Delenn. She is just crying and watching a candle burn, otherwise known on the list of Mimbari post-marriage rituals as the end of the honeymoon.
She has a very nice robe for the end of this honeymoon. Did you notice?
She does. It's satin, a ceremonial robe. Yeah.
Nice and embroidery. Yeah, it's really nice. Does Sheridan's hair look different to you? Just
a little.
Off the top of your head, it looks lighter to me. Like when he was laying in bed, when we just open up on him waking up, it looked so light. I was sitting there going, does he have frosted tips?
I mean, that is appropriate for this time frame.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the beard seems lighter. It all seems lighter. I don't know. Maybe he had a mid-season gig on something else and like had to diet a little bit or
maybe.
No idea. But it distracted me throughout the whole episode, to be honest.
Well, we'll find out next one if it was just color coding.
Yeah, good point.
Could it just been that?
Yeah, so Sheridan is moping about trying to get Delenn to get up and start her day with him. And he drops his slipper as his council voiceover begins.
This is insane. This is absurd. Uh-huh. He puts on leather shoes. He gets one on, and then the other shoe drops Literally.
I know writers who use subtext, and they're all cowards.
Zach is refusing to admit Londo to this council meeting.
Yeah. He's like, Londo, you're not on the list. Londo tries to slip him a 20. Zach's insulted. Londo leaves. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. Not before Veer, like, gets a little ethics shot in at Zach about, like,
yeah,
you know, how could our mere presence here possibly make things worse than they're definitely going to be in there?
Mm-hmm. You'd think that you would want us around for this bit, right? We would like to be around for it.
Yeah, this
and
is where
to be perfectly honest, I agree.
Yeah, this is where I started to wonder, like, I don't know, I feel I don't know a lot about politics, obviously, like here we are on this podcast.
Yeah.
But I feel like in real life, at least us humans would probably have some discussions with Londo before this.
Yeah.
Right?
I would think that you would, at the very least, Sherrod and Delenn would sit, maybe not Jakar, maybe pointedly not Jakar, but you sit down with Londo and be like, hey, look, we don't think this is you. We think that, you know, we're not trying to imply you were involved in this in any way. But here is all of this evidence we have, and we're going to the council with it tomorrow because these are our findings in the thing, and they need to see it all. And fucking surprising him, especially when they get him at the end with the Lanier shit, was just like, that is unfucking called for. Now, I understand they're like, they've been not telling him up to this point because they don't want him to get killed. They're worried that the Centauri government's going to kill him. But at this point, it's like, it's done, dude. Like,
yeah, it's too late.
Londo, you need to come apply for asylum. Your government's doing a bunch of shit without you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like a weird choice. And speaking of subtext, as Delenn and Sheridan are revealing this whole treachery to the Alliance, we cut back to Delenn's quarters where she has irresponsibly left some candles burning. And one of them dramatically burns out to theme.
We get back and Delenn and Sheridan are telling the League that they'll scrap with the Centauri if that's what they want.
Starts off, boys. You looking for a Tilly, buddy? Let's have a Donnybrook!
Franklin delivers his findings to Londo before he takes them to the council, letting everyone know the medical evidence that Centauri ships conducted these attacks based off the color of the pew-pews.
Yeah. Yeah, he gives us a big, long science speech that I was like, wow, look at all this physics that he apparently knows as well.
Right. He at least does a good job of tying it back into why he's giving this evidence. Because at first, it's just like, why the fuck is he talking about this? Should, like, Corwin be here, maybe?
He just has a lot of ground to lay.
Yeah. Garibaldi then does the same, going over tactics used, his being ambushed by the Royal Guards on the Drazi homeworld. Londo leaking the information. And then they note that there's only been one attack against a Centauri ship. It was a freighter that was supposed to be retired soon, and there was no cargo on it.
Yeah, and maybe no people.
How has that not come up?
Yeah, that could have been laid a little bit earlier. I don't think it was, unless we just missed it.
Yeah.
Mm.
I feel like I would have remembered that.
Yeah. We cut to Londo's quarters.
Yeah. I came up with a thing, and I came up with it way too late for us, unfortunately. Okay. But why haven't we been calling it Londo's condo?
Fuck.
Right. It's right there. It's right fucking there. I thought of that today, and I was so mad. I'm like, I could have been using this for 5 fucking seasons of podcast. I could have been calling it Londo's condo.
Yeah. Yeah. God damn
it's
it.
Right there. I know.
Oh, well. We'll hop on these things and BSG, right?
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll come up with something better soon. Anyways, yeah, Jakar shows up and he isn't testifying, and he wants Londo to know that he's not testifying.
Yeah. This is very generous of him, I think.
Yeah, there's no point to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we already know that he plans on remaining Londo's bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, he would know these things, you know. So I think he's doing it to just kind of make that easier on himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he does admit, like, he doesn't really have, you know, he doesn't have too much to add here. He knows a couple of things, but they're about Londo's character, and they're not talking about Londo's character. They're about the Centauri.
Yeah, and the things that he knows from being on Centauri Prime are very circumstantial, very subjective, right? He talks about, you know, Londo, you knew the vibes were off. Like, you could feel it when we were there, and I know you could feel it. And you know that I know. So, like, maybe something's really wrong, but you can't really admit that as evidence that the vibes were off.
Yeah. Londo makes his statements in the council chambers. He rips up the evidence as it snows down upon him. Londo refutes all of these charges. They've sold plenty of weapons to plenty of people. There's shit left over from their war with the Narn everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when Lanier steps in and plays the video that he took. And Londo's stunned. He needs to call home. And Sheridan tells him that when he's calling home, to let them know that they're also going to be blockaded.
As you know, a blockade is perfectly legal.
Yeah. I just want to point out the audacity that Londo has in his, you know, this is all ridiculous speech. Jakar just came and was like a real bro to him. And he even points out that, well, maybe the Narn did it. Like, you know, we left lots of ships on Narn. It could be them. That was kind of a dick move, my friend. Oh, well. The reveal is clearly set up as like maximum drama, right? But it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. The Centauri government gets a hold of Londo finally. They say it's all the Narns. They faked out the attacks by strapping chunks of destroyed ships to their own operable ships.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
The entire incident Lanier witnessed was done solely to deceive him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a good, trustworthy person, and we all know that. So we'll leave him out of the accusation here, but it was definitely the Narn.
Definitely the fucking Narn. The regent sends along a prepared statement for Londo. Mm-hmm. The Centauri withdraw from the alliance. They will not be allowing a blockade, and they will escalate with violence if prompted.
Yeah. Londo declares his intent to flounce. He's out of here. And Sheridan tells him he can never come back to Babylon 5 if he leaves now, basically.
Yep.
Makes me feel bad feelings for how many episodes we have left.
Yeah, there's a few. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be... I mean, he knows he's going to be needed on Centauri Prime sooner rather than later anyways.
Yeah. He has Veer get him transport to Centauri Prime, but specifically leaves Veer behind on Babylon 5. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Veer's going to have the hard work of reconciliation after whatever happens.
Yeah. I mean, if there's anyone who's up to it, I think it is Veer at this point.
Yeah. Delenn goes to see Jakar at his request. He tells her that he's going to be going with Londo. He understands that Londo is the best bet for actually achieving peace with the Centauri.
Mm-hmm.
Which sucks, but it is what it is, and he's come to terms with it. So he has to make sure Londo lives. And then Delenn and Jakar have a really nice goodbye.
Mm-hmm. They do.
And the unspoken thing here is, if Londo's not coming back, is Jakar coming back?
True. Yeah, Jakar gives her the rest of the book.
Yeah. Make sure that this gets out just in case I don't.
Yeah. We know that last time he went to Centauri Prime, the book accidentally got out because everyone just assumed he was dead. And now he's leaving it with Delenn for real in case he dies. Yeah.
Sheridan is looking for Garibaldi after this, so he gets Zack to go get him. And Garibaldi is fucked up, and Zack knows immediately.
Yeah, the oranges is a nice touch.
Yeah, Garibaldi is just a fucking asshole here. He is being the absolute shittiest person to Zack that he can be.
Yeah, I think this is very real, though, isn't it? Like, I'm not going to say I've dealt with a lot of addicts or alcoholics in my life, because that would not be true, or at least not to my knowledge, right? But something about this feels very, very human. Like, Zach has seen him in his soft place. Like, Garibaldi mm-hmm. is exposed. And so he immediately just goes on the offensive, goes on the attack, goes for the throat, and, like, personally insults Zach because he feels yeah. personally insulted that Zach is seeing him in this moment.
This scene is super poignant, mm-hmm. knowing Jerry Doyle had struggled with alcoholism for a chunk mm-hmm. of his life. And Jeff Conway also yeah. had issues with addiction in the 80s. And he was clean here for almost a decade. I don't have the exact dates, but
sure.
he got clean sometime in the late 80s. This is the late 90s, so we'll just say a decade. And he would not relapse for another 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then that relapse did lead to his death. So yeah. When he relapsed, he was mostly on painkillers. I did a bit of mm-hmm. reading to talk about this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was mostly on painkillers. He died of pneumonia,
mm-hmm.
Which had compounded into a significantly more serious infection that he very likely would have been able to know about mm-hmm. if he wasn't taking the amount of pain pills regularly that he was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is not a direct overdose per se. But it is definitely influenced by the amount of painkillers that he was taking outside of what he should have been.
Yeah. And the source of his pain pills or you know, feeling of need for pain pills originally was his career, right? I think he had a back injury from his dancing or from something. A show that he was on or a movie.
Yeah.
So that's just, it's really sad. And it's also sad what happened to Jerry Doyle as well. I mean, we've talked about it before that he struggled with alcoholism his whole life, right? And his cause of death mm-hmm. was something liver related.
So this feels super poignant. But these two people specifically, characters or actors, both having these struggles and then portraying them, it feels very real because of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And tragic in a way without words, because I mean Jeff Conway, Zach, I just said Jack because I can find their names in my head, at one point pulls out a pistol and it's all just like, just fucking do it, man, because you're gonna take out less people this way than you are the path you're going. And yeah. knowing the relapse that's coming for him in a number of years and all mm-hmm. of that is just, it hurts so much just to watch him to say these things.
Yeah, to have these two people who for whom it is real and it will be real all their lives and relate mm-hmm. to their deaths. You wonder if any of their loved ones ever watched this scene. How much would that hurt?
I can't fathom.
Yeah.
I don't. I just, yeah.
Garibaldi understands, but begs Zach for some time mm-hmm. To get himself together and get himself right before Zach turns him in.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, okay, I've got a problem and I know that now and I need to stop. So mm-hmm. I will be stopping.
The lie detector determined that was a lie.
Yeah. He should have taken Franklin's offer several episodes yeah. ago. That was yes. the time.
After this, Sheridan has an idea to hopefully stop all at war by getting the White Stars in between the Interstellar Alliance and the Centauri and hoping that that is enough to dissuade them from firing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Garibaldi's all like, I got this. You can trust me. I'll get this intelligence in time.
Mm-hmm. So this is an insane plan, though, right? Like,
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
This is insane. Yeah. This is so ill-advised.
I'm not necessarily talking about like, oh, we want to try to get our fighters in between the other two parties. Like, I get that, but that's the ideal situation, right? It is crazy mm-hmm. to have one man expected to monitor these channels 24 hours a day. This is yeah. bad government. This is my like soapbox here about we have a bad government for the Alliance, right?
Yeah. Yeah, our they need more budget and to have a team of people and a department highly skilled people rather than letting one guy do everything.
Yeah, our president and our head of our military are like married, and we have one guy we expect to just be like sitting by the phone 24/7, 365. Like, this is insane. This is bad government.
Yeah.
We need budget for the alliance.
And on top of it, that dude is Bezos rich.
Yeah. This is insane.
it's absurd. Completely. We see Lando Jakar on Centauri Prime when a bunch of Centauri ships fly overhead, and Lando's all like, oh man, they're posturing. This is kind of scary. And Jakar's just like, bitch.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the shadow ship scene, you know, where the shadows are overhead.
It's meant to invoke that, yeah.
Yes.
That's on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like that same angle and everything.
Yeah, and the same look on Lando's face. And Jakar is just like, this is a Tuesday, my friend. Like,
you'll get used to it. Don't worry.
Yeah. This minister is still on his high horse shit, trying to put down our boy Jakar. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, Minister Boomer here is just done with this shit. I know it's a different one, not all Centauri look alike, but he could also be Minister Boomer, all right?
Yeah, definitely.
He's just like, yeah, you know, if we just, if we see Jakar wandering around without you, we're just going to kill him. Just no, because we're at war with the Narn always. Doesn't even matter, so.
Yeah.
And then Lando's like, so you're going to get me an audience with the regent, right? Like, I need that. Like, I need to talk to him. And
he's
all like, yeah, I mean, whenever. And then Lando's just kind of like, yeah, but like, you'd know if something was going on, right? Because like, I would know if something was going on, and I don't know if something's going on. So you would know. You would tell me, right? Like, if something was going on, you would tell me you knew the thing. Yeah, you would say something. Yeah, of course you would say something. We're boys. Yeah, we go back. Yeah, you know, you just say something. Just a little here or there. That's all I'm saying is I don't need a lot. I just need a little bit. If you know something, you'd say something. You'd say something. You know something. You know, just let me know. You know, you just wouldn't keep a secret from me. Like, you'd say something, right? It just keeps going. And you just know at the defense point, you'd say something. That's all I'm saying, right? And after Lando does that for about 4 minutes, the minister's just like, yeah, you should probably go to bed now.
Yeah, you need to go freshen up. You're pretty ripe, my friend. Yeah.
Jakar, I've cultivated this musk.
I've been growing this musk specially for several days just to be on Centauri Prime.
A white star hails Garibaldi, who's passed out, having drank some of a glass just full of whiskey.
Yeah.
Like, there's no head on this. It's not a beer. And we've never seen him drink anything that wasn't hard liquor.
True.
So I got to imagine this is just a glass of whiskey as the camera pans down so we see him consumed by the alcohol.
And they're all cowards.
White Star 43 can hear that. There is no one listening because he is asleep drunk because they're really annoyed.
Yeah.
And they'd say, well, fuck it. I guess we're going by ourselves. Tell our mothers we loved them.
Leroy Jenkins. They just go right into that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And we see them pop out of hyperspace as the Drazi and Centauri open fire on each other.
Yeah, poor Zach is left to go deliver this news to Sheridan and Delenn, who apparently are allowed to sleep, unlike Mr. Garibaldi.
There are advantages to being the president.
Hail to the king, baby.
Sure, yeah.
And his wife. I get to delegate, and no one else does, because we're not hiring a single other person for this government.
Well, I do believe that Garibaldi is the kind of person who would be like, I can't trust anyone enough to delegate this, and then fuck it up.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's even like, even Franklin is like, oh, well, if I go do this Earth job, then I'll have a staff to help me do the ISA job.
Yeah.
A couple episodes ago. Like, they're clearly just so against any kind of government presence, employees whatsoever, that, you know. Just can't have any more of that government. No more big government. Everyone gets told what up but Lando because Veer can't reach him. Franklin comes to get Veer instead of a fucking ranger.
Yeah. Well, we're trying worried to keep about this on Veer the DL. Getting
jumped, right?
Yeah, we're trying to keep this on the DL, so maybe not the guy with the cape on, but, you know, Doctor, when was the last time you went to a kickboxing class? We need to know.
He does well here.
He does. He does. He
clearly picked up some stuff from Marcus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On their trips to Mars.
So they get accosted by a bunch of Brakiri in the hallway. I really liked Franklin's fake out here, where he goes in to, like, kind of give the Brakiri maybe some secrets, and then uses that opportunity to just wham him right in the face. It's very good.
Yeah. Classic Marcus move, I feel.
Yeah. That's definitely.
Oh, you wanted this secret? Come here, I'll tell you. Huzzah.
look in the end, you know?
Yeah, someone get this man at Denbach. Mm-hmm. At the council chambers, the ISA is demanding the backup that they were promised, as a scene that would make Kevin Dunn proud takes place, with Sheridan yelling at everybody.
He loses his fucking shit, right?
Yep. And
this
it's just
very real.
Super fast cut. Every line of dialogue is shown from a different camera angle as he's screaming.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
I feel this. I have felt this way that Sheridan feels in this moment. It's very real for me.
Yeah, he is just yelling at everyone, regardless. You want a war, you've got a war. Although I do admit, I thought he said, you want a war, you've done a war. I had to rewind it like 4 times to make sure that I understood what he was actually saying.
Yeah, yeah. They've all done a war. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, you've all done a war. None of you are innocents.
Yeah, on Centauri Prime, we get the minister again.
Yep.
He brings in the whole posse to let Londo know that they're now at war with the Alliance.
Yeah.
They have come to arrest Jakar because Jakar is still an Alliance observer in their midst.
Yeah.
And Londo refuses, which hilariously winds him up in a cell with Jakar.
Yeah, this is so good. This is the best cut maybe of this entire show.
Yeah, very, very good. And then him watching the Centauri ships up through the bars of their cell window. Chef's kiss. Love it.
It's so good. This whole scene is so good. Back at Delenn's quarters, she's praying. John joins her, and he's asking questions about the candle and its symbology. And she gets very samurai about it as we go to credits.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard that referred to before about the space between the candle and the star and the Grey Council context, I believe. So all of this is very Minbari. I think Delenn has real PTSD from starting wars, right?
Oh, yeah.
She's got some major, major guilt about surviving that last one with the humans and the Minbari.
Yeah. I mean, she's been the leader of a military force for multiple wars at this point, and she's talked about how important life is and how protecting life is the most important thing, and that is a lot of mental reconciliation to have to do between your beliefs and your actions.
Yeah, that's a lot of mental accounting and work, and I think she's starting to get to her a little bit.
Yeah, understandably so.
And that's where we end the episode. That's our downer ending this time.
Yeah. Well, maybe next time won't be as downer of an episode. But before we start talking about that preview, I got to ask you, Laura. On a scale of Babylon's 1 to 5, how did you feel about this episode?
You know, despite the things I pointed out about this is insane, this is a bad government, this is bonkers, etc., I really do like this episode. Same. It has, like, ratcheted up a lot of drama. I really feel it between Zach and Garibaldi. I really feel it for Londo. I really feel it for Veer. So I have to give this one a Babylon 4. Like, I don't know, it's the best of the best yet, but I feel really good about it. I like it a lot.
It definitely feels like a high watermark this season so far. Yeah. I do think this episode does a lot more to do justice to the struggles of alcoholism than anything else we've had in this subplot thus far this season.
Yeah.
It's felt very hokey up until this point, and this is the one time it's felt particularly real to me.
Yeah, it's very genuine.
Which I appreciate the hell out of. The story is very good. The only thing is there's some weird choices with the director and just like shoving symbolism very forcefully down our throats in a way that made me uncomfortable sometimes. Just like, come on, I am an audience paying attention. You don't need to show me the other shoe fucking dropping.
Garibaldi, you don't need to show me the candle go out.
Consumed by alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah, the candle dropping. There's a lot of stuff where it's just like, I get it, guys. I'm following.
Yeah.
I'm paying attention, I promise.
And it's a lot of it in one episode. Just like,
yeah,
bang, bang, bang. It's one of those things. Maybe if these things were spread out over several episodes, we might not be saying these things. We might not even notice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I feel like you get one an episode. Mm-hmm. This says like four.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I get it.
It's
so,
a bit much.
Did you give it a number?
A 4 out of 5.
All right.
Right there with you.
Okay. I think we're in agreement a lot in season 5. Or close.
We tend to be pretty good. I think if you give a half point wiggle room on our ratings,
we're pretty in sync.
Basically the same almost every single episode. There's a handful that we've disagreed on.
That's fun. Yeah.
All right. Well, next week, we've got a totally normal episode, guys. I promise. It's season 5, episode 17, Movements of Fire and Shadow. The seemingly purposeless Centauri attacks culminate in a bizarre and terrifying climax. The White Starfleet joins the war, while Minbari decides to help Earth build a destroyer-class ship. That's fun. That's Crusade shit.
Oh, neat.
That's starting to seed that plot for Crusade. So that's fun.
Cool. Yeah. I have so minimal exposure to Crusade that I wouldn't have caught that. So thanks for pointing that out for me. I'll be sure to pay attention.
To be perfectly honest, I was talking to friend of the podcast and co-host on our podcast network, Vic, of Dominion Media Television. And I had mentioned that episode was coming up to him. And he's all like, oh, that's the one where they lay the seeds for Crusade. And I'm all like, oh yeah, that is what that destroyer class ship is. So all credit to him with that one.
Thanks, Vic.
Yeah. Just like we have to give all credit to Jeremy Siegel for our lovely theme music. Thanks, Jeremy. We really appreciate you doing the theme music for us. It means a lot. You can find more of Jeremy's work at jeremysiegel42.bandcamp.com. Or on streaming services as Nuclear Jaguar. And then there's also, I don't know if any of his other bands, he's in a couple of bands right now. He's doing a lot of music. It's very cool. And I don't know where you can find those things, but
we'll
I'm
going
to make a point of finding out. Yeah.
We'll get a whole list of names.
Yeah.
Thanks also to Angry Deck Time Machine on Instagram for our podcast artwork.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Aaron, for editing our podcast and making us sound coherent. We really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Especially after today.
Yeah, this midday record. Who knows?
And thanks to you, the listener, for being here with us while all our dreams were torn asunder. We really appreciate it. We would love to hear more from you if you want to come over to the Discord or you want to reach out to us at whoareyoub5@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts, especially on the end of season 5.
Need those season 5 thoughts for our season recap that's going to be coming out as of this airing in several weeks, but as of recording, less weeks. So
yeah,
get those in.
Yeah, please do.
This might be the last chance. Maybe one more. All right, well, we'll see you next week, Internet.
Bye.